Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was a previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I got to tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we got to do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
Because safety is of the utmost importance. When you've been a partner and gone through a betrayal, you deserve safety, and it's tough to find that because it is such an unsafe situation. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and I'm glad to be with you this afternoon. I realized last week I dropped the ball. I did not have a show. I was at a workshop, and I went ahead and put it in, but it did not play. So I am sorry if you were looking for me last week. You know, we at AppSats like to be available every single week and disseminate information that will help you know how to proceed in your life. I've got a good show today. It's something we've not really talked much about. And got a woman who is working in the church, really helping the church know how to respond to sex addiction and partner betrayal. In AppSats, we oftentimes know that when you don't know better, you don't do better. And that actually therapists, pastors, professionals can do great harm if they try to blame the partner for anything. You know, we definitely understand that you didn't do anything to cause this, whether you had marital problems or not. You did not do anything to cause sexual addiction. That was something that happened to him probably way earlier than he's ever known you. It started, that compulsion. And part of addiction means that it got out of control. It was uncontrollable. And that is one of the characteristics of sex addiction. Now, you may not know this, but I'm a certified sexual addictions therapist as well as a clinical certified partner trauma specialist. And so I have my certification from AppSats and from ITAP, and they're both premier organizations in the world. And I've had my CSAT for a lot longer than I've had my AppSAT. And, you know, we had to learn to know what to look for to determine, was this man on the road to sex addiction or did he have it full blown? And there are many criteria that one can use to determine how much of a problem this is. For instance, I just mentioned one characteristic, and that is invariably, an addict will want to stop their behavior. They'll want to stop seeing prostitutes. They'll want to stop going to massage parlors. They'll want to stop looking at pornography. And they tell themselves they're going to stop, and then they don't. It's not like they don't want to stop, but whether it's 20 minutes later, 2 hours later, or 2 days later, that nagging, aching urge is encouraging them to just open up the computer and look, to just go by the massage parlor, and this time just get a real massage. To just look again what's available, you certainly don't have to click. Well, I know that you know, and I certainly know, that any time somebody with sex addiction flirts with the boundaries, they're going to get caught. They're going to get caught up in the compulsion again. So inability to stop is one criteria. Oftentimes, men talk to me about time distortion. You know, they get on the internet just to clickbait around or to look at some pornography for 10, 15, 20 minutes, and 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours later, they're still looking. And what may have been 4 hours worth seems like it was only 20 minutes. And it causes great distress in a relationship because he's chronically late, or he stays up too late and he's chronically tired, or he misses an event. He was going to meet you at the kids' soccer game, and he misses it altogether. Or he was going to come right home, and he's 4.5 hours late because he's at the office acting out. So time distortion is a big part of it. And I'm a hypnotherapist, and what I know is that in hypnotherapy, when somebody is in trance, there is time distortion. Now, I mentioned trance. Sex addiction causes a trance-like state. While acting out, the addict, male or female, goes into trance. They're in an altered state that takes them to whatever they need to do. And then they come out of it and they feel like they hate themselves. There's a lot of anger, despair, self-loathing. And so, if the behavior has interfered with relationships or work on a significant level, it's part of the addiction. And you and I both know that at any point on this continuum, it's going to interfere with the relationship because you can't have intimacy with another person, good emotional intimacy, if you are going to act out and keep a secret. It just can't happen. And so for many of our addicts, they know that their behavior interfered with or even destroyed intimacy. And I'm not talking physical intimacy. I'm talking emotional intimacy. Now, an addiction will invariably bring about health problems. You know, whether it's a sexually transmitted disease, whether it's, I met a man that had a heart attack shortly after discovery. He said, yeah, we can't prove it, but I absolutely know that my heart attack was because I got caught acting out. And I could not stand the pain that I caused my wife. So does it compromise health? That's what we got to look at. Does it progress? Does it get worse and worse and worse? you know, one of the things I know is that truly this behavior escalates. It never stands still. If it does stand still, if somebody's been able to look at pornography for 20 minutes for the last 15 or 20 years and it hasn't gotten any worse, it's not an addiction. It may be a serious problem in the relationship or in terms of self-esteem and mental health, but it is not an addiction, because an addiction always gets worse. The addict always needs more. And so we're always looking at how has this behavior escalated? How has it worsened? And then within that sexually addictive cycle, unfortunately, when somebody gets bored or lonely, is angry, and says, I'm going to medicate my feelings by acting out, once they act out, they feel horrible, they feel angry, they feel anxious, and that causes the need to medicate more feelings. You can see the vicious cycle, how that occurs. So, again, we look for a cycle that never ends until the recovery tools are used. And that's what we try to do, is we work with addicts and teach them the tools to make the difference, to behaviorally change, and to work on the psychological mental health that's needed to build self-esteem and then to give back. I think you've heard me say it before, but Patrick Carnes said, and he's the guru of sex addiction, he said, you know, when discovery occurs, there is great suffering, and most of the time that suffering involves the family. And when that suffering occurs, it can be the catalyst to have the addict say, okay, this is deal-breaking. I cannot go through this again. I can't watch my wife suffer like this. She's in a state of feud, or she's in a state of shock, or she's in a state of rage. And it's those moments, those deal-breaking moments, that help him to get clean, perhaps for the very first time. Now, if you're one of the unfortunate ones that you've watched your husband struggle, and it hasn't gotten better, you need to get yourself to a specialist that works with partner betrayal so that you can develop some safety plans, some action plans that have good boundaries and that restore your sense of self and self-esteem. And again, that's what we're going to be talking about today. You know, I say this all the time. Churches are oftentimes the first responders to couples who need help from infidelity, sex addiction, and partner betrayal. And Maurice Lano is a specialist that works with churches and church leaders to help create this kind of programming and to educate the churches so that the churches do no harm. And because we're all pioneers, we all have to work together on this. You know, I'm always doing it with other therapists and coaches and teaching them about sex addiction and partner betrayal so that they will have an idea of what not to do that they might have done right off the bat. And so I'm really excited to have her on. I, of course, want you to get to know a little bit about her counseling background. She is an APSAT. I bet you knew that. And so I am going to welcome Marie to the show. Thank you so much for being a part of Betrayal Partner Radio. How are you?
Hi, Carol. How are you doing? So great to be here today.
Yeah, it's been a long week, but I think we all can say that. And when you're in partner betrayal, it quadruples the stress in a normal week. So we know that this is a really hard time for our partners. How have you weathered the storm of COVID-19?
Well, it really has impacted my life for sure. Working from home, not being able to go into the office, noticing that I'm not moving about as much, and it weighs on you some. You know, there isn't as many outlets to be able to communicate with others and just, you know, hang out with friends. And I find that with my clients, they're kind of feeling the same way, that they long to be able to be in the presence of other women, you know, in relationship and community.
Absolutely. And I'm going to ask you, if you would tell our listening audience a little bit about today's topic and how you got involved and what made you go into counseling. I think that would be very helpful as we talk about churches and what they can do and how we can help them to get smarter and do better.
Well, I started counseling by doing some lay counseling at my church years ago and got some training. And then I felt like I was at a crossroads and needed to decide whether I wanted to go the professional route or the lay counseling route. And I chose the professional route. And then as I went to school and I learned very little about trauma in school, which is kind of surprising. And when I graduated, I found that I was working with little children who had all been traumatized and had to get continued training in trauma to help me to care for them. And it just seemed like each time I went into a new area, I actually was working at a home for women who had been trafficked, and there was so much trauma there, and I needed to get additional training. So I just continued to get more and more training in trauma. And so then it ended up that I got clients with a lot of trauma. You know, it just sort of was like this ripple effect. And I started working for an organization that has counselors in their church. It's called Safe Harbor Counseling. So they will provide counselors for different churches. You just need to allow space. I started there, and then I ended up being hired by the church as well. So I work for Safe Harbor, and I work for my church. And there's kind of like this beauty of being able to bring some of the professional aspects of counseling to the church, you know, and our church really is embracing that. They're very open to hearing about how to care for people with all sorts of clinical issues, but definitely are open to hearing about caring for betrayed partners and for the addicts as well.
Okay, so obviously, you had a wealth of experience both from the sex trafficking and aspect to trauma. And so would you just share with our listening audience, what do you consider to be trauma? I mean, that's such a huge concept.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, we talk about the big T traumas, right, and the little T traumas. So the big T trauma is, you know, if you're we're in Katrina and affected by a big hurricane or in a car accident, those kind of that you would quickly know that that was PTSD. But then the little T traumas are usually kind of like the usually ongoing, like maybe developmental trauma of living in a home where maybe you didn't get enough food or you weren't cared for properly, or there might have been some abuse. That could be like developmental sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Like the little T traumas, but there's several of them. Do you know what I mean? And they affect you, your mind and your body. And I'm a big fan of Bessel van der Kolk, who talks about how the body keeps the score. And you may not remember something, you know, cognitively, but your body remembers it. And I see that impact on women who have been had this betrayal trauma, that their bodies are so affected by the trauma of discovery.
Yeah, and I know, Marie, that we talk a lot about when women have found out, they go outside of their window of tolerance, if you will, and they either get super depressed or they get super anxious and agitated. And even do things that they would never have considered before.
Right.
Because their brain is kind of offline. I mean, they truly are in a post-traumatic state. And then, of course, after months or maybe even years after discovery, there still may be more trauma that follows them around because they don't feel safe. They don't know when the other shoe is going to fall. And so what made you decide to work on your specialty with trauma training? I mean, this is a hard field.
So in general trauma or with the abscess?
Both.
Okay. So I think working with the women that were trafficked, I found that 99% of them had had a history of sexual abuse. And I felt like I needed to get trained in that. And then once I got trained in that, I started doing groups for it. And then I started to recognize some of my own developmental trauma from childhood. And it's interesting how you have these your own epiphanies, you know, when you go through your own trainings. And the thing that I feel like I wish I had known more about betrayal trauma, because I did understand trauma to a degree, but as I was seeing these different women who'd been impacted by their husbands being addicts and acting out, I didn't recognize that as trauma. Although, thankfully, I was trained to care for people from a trauma perspective, so I may have done more harm than I did. So I'm so grateful for all that I'm learning now that I'm, you know, in the ABSAT world and getting the consultation. I just didn't even know how much I didn't know, you know.
Well, absolutely, and I always tell the story, and you may even have heard me say it, that when I got certified as a sex addiction therapist, I thought, I'm a fraud. I really still don't know what I'm doing. I just understand conceptually, but I don't really know. And now, 13 years later, 14 years later, I really feel very, very wise about this. There's so much predictability in sex addiction and even in partner betrayal, because it does affect the body in such a distinct way. So you're in the midst of getting your training, and you started to work at your church, and you actually met someone who was married to a sex addict. Tell us that story.
So I was assigned, you know, actually two people. I was thinking about it today. There were two women. I think they were some of my very first clients when I was working at the church. And both of their husbands were sex addicts. And the one, she was really, really hurt by, she felt like the church didn't really understand what was going on with her. And she had this intimate, you know, kind of control that her husband had over her, and eventually she was able to leave. I did not have the tools that I have today that I would have hoped that I could have to help her. And I don't even think I recognized at the time that he was an addict until afterwards, because of some of the behaviors that he had. He did, as far as she knew, that he did not. He did not go outside the marriage, but there were things within the marriage that were very abusive. And so I was really kind of shocked by it, because I think a lot of people think when they're counseling and they're at the church, and these people who go to the church, well, of course, you know, you're not going to see these horrifying stories, right? You're going to imagine at church it's not going to be that bad. And so it was a rude awakening for me that inside and outside the church we're going to see, you know, all sorts of mental health issues, you know.
Absolutely.
But the other,
I say that the church is oftentimes the first responder. And I was writing that topic, that description for today's show, I thought, I would never have said first responder, but obviously with COVID-19, we know what it's like to be on the front lines with this kind of sexual addiction pandemic, if you will. And and so unless you've been trained in sex addiction and partner betrayal, you might not even know what you don't know. And so you try to work with men and women from the standpoint of this is good pastoral help or this is good counseling help. And what we find is that that is not necessarily true. As a matter of fact, it can do more harm than good. So do you think that this woman felt understood by the church?
I don't think so. I don't know how much she really opened up about what was going on. But I think, you know, in general, in a lot of ways, you know, people want to, we want to save the marriage or we want to do couples counseling and try to work things out, and they're not recognizing, you know, that the person is really a victim of emotional abuse and being mistreated, that it's not that you could bring in the addict and you know, try to work things out, and somehow the blame ends up going on to the partner. So I'm not sure if she felt it or not. I know that she had a lay counselor before me who was very helpful for her and encouraging, but I think in general she felt like, because her husband was still involved in the church, that that people just didn't see and didn't know, you know. And of course she wasn't outspoken about it. So
yeah, she wasn't
hard.
But on some level you were, because you decided to guide the leaders and educate the staff. So tell us a little bit about that journey.
Well, so it, that was several years ago when I started, but recently I've been so grateful to even find out about ABSATS. We have so many people that have come in and needed help that I started doing a search and looked at certifications in this area, and I found that there was only one counselor in Maryland that had the ABSAT training, and I thought, gosh, there's only one person in Maryland. I need to go through this training, then I can help the people in the church, like the people that are part of the group that we created, and also let the staff know of, you know, maybe some ways to help care. So so that was when I searched ABSATS online, and I saw that you all offered this training this past fall. And then after that, we have reached out to a CSAT specialist and an ABSAT specialist and invited him to come in. And he came in and educated a lot of our pastors about sex addiction and partner betrayal. And then I'm just trying to, like, one-on-one talk to different members of the church staff to help them to just get an understanding of how we're going to walk alongside them, like the best way to walk alongside them, because it's not like your traditional, oh, these two aren't getting along, you know, it's kind of both people's fault, and if they just, they're, you know, if they both make some changes, things are going to be better. It's very different than how you would typically see problems in a marriage.
Well, 100%. And just a couple of examples of what people don't know. I mean, oftentimes when this kind of thing happens, a well-meaning pastor might delve into the sexuality of the couple because he doesn't understand that sex addiction has nothing to do with a couple's sexuality.
Right.
And he might ask inquiring questions like, well, how much sex were you having? Did you think maybe, Mary, that you could have indulged in more sex, spent more time with your husband, focused in on him? Which, of course, it doesn't mean to, but it ends up blaming the partner as if she is responsible for the sex addict's choices. Can you share another way that a pastor or a Christian leader might say something or do something that is not helpful in the coupleship?
Well, I have to say that in my church, I felt like they've handled things really well, and they seek outside help. So I haven't really seen that personally where there's been any red flags for me, for our pastors at the church. But I do think that that it's important to look out for certain behaviors. Like I've been writing up some bullets about sex addiction and partner betrayal to give to my pastor because he asked me to write something up. And one thing that I was writing in there is that this oftentimes that, you know, the addict will just come across as, you know, cool and got everything under control, whereas if he were to come in with the partner that's been betrayed and she just looks like she's, you know, an anxious wreck, you know, and I think those two walking in together in the church, who's the one that looks like it's got it all together and she looks mm-hmm. like she's crazy, right? I think that's something
right.
to warn. That's one of the things I'm just suggesting that we look out for, just because you know, the addict comes in and looking like he's got it all together, that you don't be deceived by that behavior, you know.
Well, and you mentioned it earlier when what we know through APSATS is that getting a couple into couples counseling immediately can do more harm than good. And that's
yeah.
certainly what pastors and Christian leaders might advise, because that's what you would typically advise to anybody that was having a relationship problem. But what we
right.
know to be true is that he has to have a good amount of recovery, at least 90 days before
mm-hmm.
the disclosure occurs. And that therapeutic formal disclosure is dependent on if she wants it. But if she wants that, that's the very next step to finding out all
oh, yeah.
the truth at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can begin to do early couples recovery work, which is really the process of building empathy and communication skills and compromising and negotiating and just the very basics so that they can navigate being together or not.
Mm-hmm.
While they try to determine what do they want to do for their future. So I'm
yeah.
super happy that your church has been so willing to
mm-hmm.
seek outside help, and you've been able to pull in a certified sexual addictions therapist to help educate this process. And I'm wondering, since you have so much experience working in the church, what are the statistics for pornography use within the church compared to outside of the church?
Yeah, so I think it's pretty similar. I think I was looking today, the number's about 70% inside the church of use by men, and I think it's closer to like in the 80s outside the church. So it's still pretty high. You know, that the number is not too different.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, because of course culturally, at least in the United States, when this computerized internet developed in the late 90s, around 1998, that what was driving computer sales was pornography.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense that men especially didn't know what they were getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm wondering, do you think there's anything unique about Christian women who discover that their husband is an addict?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, a lot of times they're very surprised, but I also think that there's some things in the Christian world where a lot of women that I've worked with, they've said that they've been telling themselves all along that they need to be forgiving. You know, they might see some clues, but they are giving themselves a message that they need to be more tolerant, or they shouldn't get so angry. Like that's kind of like that sixth sense that they sort of know that something is happening, but they can't put their finger on it. And then prior to the discovery, they've probably been telling themselves a message that there's something wrong with them. And I know that's true for inside and outside the church, but I do feel like there's an added layer inside the church of feeling like if, you know, you're going to be like Jesus, you're going to be nice, and you're not going to speak up, and you're going to constantly be forgiving. And you know, I think there's kind of like this internal dialogue. I've actually been talking to one of my clients recently who who's been saying that that was completely the case for her, and she was went to Bible study after Bible study, and it wasn't until she had to just tell her husband that he had, needed to move out that he that she started to understand what was going on, and that he actually decided to go get the help that he needs, and he's found a CSAT specialist. So I do think that that in the church there's kind of that added layer of feeling like we have to be nice all the time, and we question ourselves.
And so it's kind of that Christian upbringing that then bleeds into how you should handle chronic infidelity or sexual betrayal or partner betrayal. And it puts extra pressure on the woman to kind of repress her feelings, right?
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when there's the scriptures about divorce, and so I think a lot of times people think that if we separate, then we're saying that we want a divorce and that there's something wrong with us if we're going to get a divorce. But sometimes that therapeutic separation can be really helpful for, you know, reconciliation in the future.
And so will you say a little bit more about that? Because I know that most of my cases, when it comes to therapeutic separation, the women just do not feel like their husbands are doing what it takes to make her feel safe. And so that's a boundary. You know, she says, I don't necessarily want to get divorced, but I can't live like this any longer. So what's your experience?
Well, I am pretty new to this world, but I have heard that separation can be very helpful because it's kind of like that crisis can drive the addict to do more of the hard work. You know, that crisis of being separated might help them to do the harder work. And then also it can help her to really recover and care for herself and really see what's been going on. I've found a lot of women when they are away from the spouse, they're actually see more about what's happened, you know, and what is happening, and they can make decisions about what they want. And you know, oftentimes the men have the option too to do the hard work to get better or not do that work. But the hope is that he would be able to do the work and she would be able to get the healing and there can be reconciliation. You know.
Barbara Steffens has said that her husband said that what helped him the most was knowing her bottom line and knowing about her anger. And so you and I both know that oftentimes when the brain goes offline, women who are not at all aggressive want to curse, or they, you know, they want to yell, or they rage, or they get physical.
Mm-hmm.
We don't advocate that at all. But what we do advocate for is for women to decide what their bottom line is and to stick to that, because they have to respect their own bottom line by creating their own safety if their husband isn't in that place.
I really like that. Yeah, that's important. And a big part of my job, I felt like all along, even before I got into the world of APSAT, is helping women to get in touch with their core and what they really want and their own intuition to make decisions, you know, and that really is obliterated through this process, isn't it? And that's a big part of what we're doing with that safety and stabilization is to help to rebuild.
Absolutely. And so, you know, being in the church environment and helping the church to be the first responders in a healthy way is really a unique experience. Can you tell me what opportunities and or roadblocks you may have run into in the church?
Well, I would say that a big opportunity has been that there are a lot of people that, like you said, that were the first responders, and people reach out to, a lot of times they'll reach out to the pastors for help, and then the pastors will refer them to our counseling ministry to get the help that they need. So I think that that's an opportunity there, because people do, they just show up at the church and they ask for help. I think there's less stigma of going to a pastor than there is to going to a counselor, going to a counselor first. There's more stigma there, I think. So that's an opportunity. And then getting that extra care that we can connect people to Bible studies, to other men's communities, to get prayer. And then we also offer a group for pornography addiction. And we also offer a group for betrayal trauma. And so then we can get people connected with those small groups, but we kind of know, we have the pulse on what's going on with them. We're kind of close by, you know. We don't just send them out. We're nearby to be there for them, and we develop relationships with them, and then they get connected with other people. And I think they build really strong friendships, and they get connected, and they also get a lot of hope through that, you know, hope in seeing other people that are further along, but also hope in God, you know, and their faith grows. So that's been really a great opportunity and unique thing to be able to see. Because I think if I was just in a counseling center, I wouldn't really know the different people that are in the different groups and what's going on and how we can care for them in so many different ways.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up in terms of, you know, so many women wonder, when a crisis like this occurs, they wonder what they did that contributed to that separation from God. Why would God do this to them? Why would God allow this to happen to them? And they even go back over their own life, and they wonder if they're not being punished by God. What are your feelings about that?
Well, I think that's evidence that they've gone through trauma when they blame themselves. But yeah, I do. I have heard that, you know, women are so hard on themselves when this happens, and I think that's when we can help to get them connected in a study, and we can pray with them, because that's something that you can't really offer in you know, in the secular environments. We're gonna talk to them about what their faith is, maybe in a secular environment, but we might not be able to pray with them if we have them in a group, you know. So I think there is that added advantage in other people that have had that same experience, but again are further along and have found a different understanding. They can share their experiences with them. But yeah, that's really tough when people blame themselves.
Yeah. And it makes sense, too, if they've gotten bad advice down the road that it's time to forgive, that can be equally as tough. And you and I both know from an upset standpoint that it is the woman's choice, you know, the partner's choice, if and when she is going to forgive. And we all know that forgiveness is really for the person that's angry or hurt or sad. Mm-hmm. And so we do want women to not blame themselves at all, but to forgive themselves in any way if they're feeling responsible. So I'm going to ask you, do you have many of the women in your group that say they've been asked to forgive the addict?
Well, over the years, I've heard that with, you know, asking to forgive the addict, or when I've worked with women who have been sexually abused, they will share that over the years people have told them to just let it go, or why don't they just forgive? It happened so long ago. Those kind of statements. And what I've learned is if you read the book by Atul Gawande called The Book of Forgiving, he talks about how prior to forgiveness, we need to be able to tell the story, and we need to name the hurt. It's just so important that if you are able to tell the whole story, name the hurt, and then be asked for forgiveness, and then you have the opportunity whether you are going to either you're going to renew or release that relationship. And so, and I think there's, it's a very important to know the distinction between reconciliation and forgiveness. Because I think a lot of times people think that forgiveness means reconciliation. And so I think this idea of I need to be able to tell that story and I need to be able to name the pain that I've experienced. And then through that, the fruit of that can be forgiveness. Because I find that when people, they go through the groups with me or they're working with me individually, eventually they will bring it up. You know, they will bring up forgiveness on their own. I don't have to bring it up at all. But 99% of the time they bring it up. And they'll say, what's that?
And I that would make a lot of sense that they're the ones to bring it up. Now let me ask you, your groups that you run, are they time limited? Are they face to face? How big are they? What are they like?
Well, they were face to face. Now they're face to face through Ring Central and Zoom. We have the one group for women who have been betrayed, and that's offered October to May. And I think a lot of the women have really become good friends and they stay connected outside of the group. But it had run biweekly. Now it's being run weekly because the women want to see each other more. Unfortunately, some of the women aren't able to come because of family constraints. They aren't able to do the Zoom calls. It was easier for them to actually meet face-to-face. And we use a couple different books. Over the years, we've read through a couple different books trying to figure out which ones are the best ones. This past fall, we used Michelle May's book called The Aftermath of Betrayal, which is like a really small booklet that helps women that are just first hit with the betrayal trauma. And then since then, they've been using, Marnie Means' book about healing recovery. That was recommended at the APSAT training. So the people are loving that workbook.
Are you talking about Marcia Means,
Yeah,
Marcia Means. And, you know, she co-wrote with Barbara Stephens, My Sexually Addicted Spouse. So I love her work.
Yeah, people are really enjoying it, and it's a workbook, and it's an open group. I've insisted that this is not a group that closes, and we don't let new members come in. People can join anytime. And it seems to work. I mean, some groups are better when they're closed, but this is something that it's every couple weeks there's somebody new that needs a group, and so we keep it open. And people have embraced it, and it's worked out fine.
Yeah, I get that. That way, you've got support for anybody that needs it. And so, again, the size of the group may range from what to what?
So I think it was about 20-some, because some people have been coming for years, but I think it's gone down to about 12 or so. It varies every week. Yeah.
Okay. And so I know we have to end, and I was wondering, if people obviously want to be in a group, what area, you know, of the country are you in? And how can people get a hold of you to get more information about you specifically?
Okay. Well, I'm in the Columbia, Maryland area, and our church is Fulton. Our church is Fulton, Maryland. But if somebody wants to email me, I don't have a website. Our church has a website. It's Grace Community Church in Fulton, Maryland. Or they can email me at counseling@gcconline.org. And that's our...
So say that website one more time.
The website is Grace Community Church. It's in Fulton, Maryland. I don't have the website link right in front of me.
I'm looking for it, too. I don't know if I have it. No, I don't. Okay.
Grace.community.
Say that again?
It's grace.community.
Got it.
Yeah.
And so as we end for today, I'm wondering two more questions. I'm wondering, in your experience with partners, and you say I'm fairly new to this, but you have worked diligently on this, what do you find helps partners the most?
I think just being heard and feeling validated for their feelings. And one of my clients was telling me the other day, she said, "You always tell me that makes sense, that makes sense." Because she's telling herself a different story. You know, I didn't even realize I was telling her that, but I just think validation is so important. And encouraging them to find help, you know, and specific help. I think I was listening to one of your podcasts earlier about that need to get the specific help, not just, you know, a general counselor, somebody that really understands betrayal.
Oh, absolutely. And so I so appreciate that you have become a second APSAT in the state of Maryland. And I actually wrote that this podcast was going to be helpful for people who perhaps wanted to help their own church to become more partner sensitive. What would you tell those folks?
See if they can go through the APSAT training and then have a conversation with the pastors of the church and encourage them to really study it and understand. I think that would be a great, you know, a big step, or even just starting to read some of the books and understanding it from a different perspective. Because I think, like I said, there was so much that I didn't know and wish I had known before. I mean, I think I cared as best as I could for people, but I think I could have cared even better if I had known more.
Well, you sure were honest, and, you know, when you said that you wonder if you did some harm in trying to help, and I know that we all have been at that place at some point, some way, somehow. So, Maurice, I want to thank you so much for helping our audience understand, you know, how the church can help and do better and continued success, because you're working really hard from a variety of perspectives.
Well, thank you so much, Carol. I appreciate you, and I was really grateful for meeting you at the APSAT training and all that you're teaching, and I'm just really grateful.
All right. Well, I look forward to collaborating further, so keep me posted on new and different things you're doing so we can let the world know. You have a good day.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Yes, obviously a very hard worker, very spiritual, and starts at the grassroots level, and that's with the church. Now, I know COVID has been very tough on everybody, and there might be a chance that you're living with somebody and you're in the midst of disclosure. And, you know, I know that I'm going in and doing disclosures, even if I'm told to stay in. I'm not a believer in telehealth disclosures. I want to be there in the room so I can pick my partner up if I need to and get her through this. So I just want you to know our prayers and our love go out to all of you. And you stay tuned to this show. It is definitely just for you. It's on Partner Betrayal. It's called Partner Betrayal Radio. And I am probably going to ask for your help. I started thinking about getting this book out into the world. And I know Dr. Phil doesn't necessarily believe in sex addiction. I think Oprah would love help her heal and would love to know that men are working on empathy and communication. And so I may do a video on YouTube and have you all bombard the media with getting this book on television so we can help more people. I'll keep you posted, but I was walking today and I thought, why don't you ask your listeners? You don't ask your listeners for anything and you need the help. So stay tuned. I'm going to have a request just for you. Woohoo! One more thing for you to do, huh? And thank you from APSAT. Go to APSATS.org, APSATS.org, to find the partner-sensitive therapist or coach that you can work with specifically. And as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.